4. HMS Chihiro, 50, Garath Bay, Kingdom of Dolar.
My son, you should sit down and count to 1,000 slowly. If not in the interest of your spiritual serenity, in the interest of avoiding apoplexy.
Earl Thirsk's head whipped around. Had the speaker been anyone besides Stiphon Mike, the Earl's response would probably have been both pungent and profane. Under the circumstances, however, both those options were denied him, although he couldn't quite keep the heat out of his gaze. Mike simply gazed at him serenely, and after a moment, Thirsk felt his own lips twitch unwillingly. After all, the bishop had a point.
"Seriously, Lewis," Mike said, pointing at the Earl's desk chair. "Stop pacing around like a slash lizard with its tail cut off. I understand exactly why you're so furious, but in the long run, I think this may actually work out in our favor."
Thirsk blinked in surprise. He looked at the bishop for several seconds, then walked slowly around the desk, seated himself as directed, and cocked his head. "I would be very interested to hear how you reached that conclusion, my lord," he said politely.
"Think about it," Mike replied. "They've done exactly what you predicted, and they got away with it because neither Thorast nor the Harchongis did what you've been recommending for months. So the Carizians now have their forward bases, exactly where you said they'd want them. For that matter, exactly where you told Thorast they'd put them after you got the governor of Quiroz's dispatch. And I don't doubt they're going to make their presence very unpleasantly felt, which in turn is going to increase the pressure on you and on me once Chancellor Trenaire and his colleagues."
Mike was far too cautious to use the term the Group of Four, even with someone he'd come to trust as much as he trusted Thirsk.
"Hear about this. Agreed?"
"Oh, I can safely say I concur with that much," Thirsk said, and the bishop shrugged.
"Well, when they start screaming at you to do something, anything, I, for one, am going to point out to them, quite forcefully, that if they'd listened to you in the beginning, you wouldn't have to do the aforesaid something, anything, to get their arses out of the crack they've wedged themselves so tightly into."
Thirsk's eyebrows rose. He and Mike had found themselves working more and more closely together, and his respect for the Schulerite had grown steadily. He had to admit that his willingness to trust Mike had taken a severe blow, as the reports coming out of the temple had mounted, however. He knew perfectly well that Mike hadn't had a thing to do with that madness, but the bishop was a Schulerite, and Thirsk had found that hard to forgive. "Probably because I spent so much time under official displeasure myself after Crag Reach," he thought now. "For a while there, I was fairly certain Fern was going to hand me over to either Thorast or the Inquisition as the kingdom's scapegoat. So I suppose I've got a better feel for the sheer cynicism involved in all this. But to think that even Clintan would go this far, just slaughtering so many of his fellow vicars and so many bishops and archbishops, would have been bad enough, especially this way. But their families? Madness." He knew he wasn't the only Dolaran who felt that way, although very few of those who did were stupid enough to say so. And he suspected Bishop Stiphon came very close to sharing his own feelings. On the other hand, Clintan had made his point crystal clear. Treachery would be punished as severely as heresy, and anything short of complete and total loyalty was, by definition, treachery. "And I don't doubt military defeat will be defined as treachery, too," he thought grimly. "Especially if someone's been unfortunate enough to have suffered defeat once before. I suppose I should think of it as an additional incentive to do well." That last thought woke at least a flicker of amusement, and he was grateful for it. Humorous thoughts had been hard to come by lately. "I hadn't thought of it from exactly that perspective, my lord," he said with a wintry smile. "My previous experience with being right when everyone else was wrong hasn't precisely filled me with boundless confidence in how they're going to react when it all happens again. My observation is that powerful men get even more vengeful if you insist on proving they're always wrong.
Ah, but this time, you're going to keep your mouth shut. You're not going to say one word about Claw Island or Trove Island. You're just going to provide your normal, well-reasoned, cogent arguments about how we should respond. I'll rub all the salt into the wounds. At least something good should come of...
The bishop paused suddenly. For an instant his mouth tightened, then he shrugged.
At least something good should come of your being right yet again, he finished.
Thirsk nodded silently, but his eyes were very intent. He knew what Mike had started to say, though it was the closest he'd yet come to anything which could be construed as remotely critical of the head of his own order. Yet there was a certain grim truth to it, Thirsk reflected. After Clinton's brutal demonstration, no layman, and precious few bishops or archbishops, were going to so much as look like they were arguing with a Schulerite bishop. I hope you're right about that, my lord, Thirsk said, addressing what the bishop had said rather than what he had not said. Their eyes met, and he saw the understanding in Mike's gaze. Then the bishop shook himself.
So, what do you recommend? He asked.
Actually, my lord, if you're serious about the latitude I'm likely to enjoy, I think we may be able to turn this into an opportunity as well as a problem.
Indeed?
Mike's eyes narrowed.
How so?